the Senate Joint Resolution 4, and it comes to you at this point as an A, engrossed version. What it attempts to basically accomplish is to send to the Oregon voters an increase in tobacco tax, both cigarettes and OTP, other tobacco products. The cigarette tax would be about 84.5 cents per pack, and then 30% increase on the OTP. In order to keep this constitutional amendment concise and to the point, it was simplified in a sense to keep it that way. Also, part of this constitutional amendment happens to be the dedication of this revenue that will be increased from the increase in tax. So the revenue dedicated to basically uninsured kids as well as low income and the disadvantaged population. So that, in essence, what would Senate Joint Resolution 4 would do, which leaves a lot of the mission to be accomplished in the different variations of the Healthy Kids Initiative to be delegated to Senate Bill 3 to accomplish these different other tasks. And Senate Bill 3, what it does, it goes back and recreates the Healthy Kids program and all its processes and variations. However, as far as a tax, what was left in Senate SJR 14, Senate Joint Resolution 4, not 14, would be the thing that we have always attempted to do when we increase the cigarette tax and the OTP. As a byproduct of doing so, there's always a push down on the consumption levels of the products, and therefore what 20 cents or $1.18 today or $1.18 brings on the number of packs, it has a less number of packs to apply to, which means the uses that today are living off that tax that is coming out of the $1.18 go a little short in their expectations, which we have always tried to adjust in the legislative process for this anytime there is an increase with what we call or dub at this point as the hold harmless provisions. So in order to do that, and without being able to hold the hold harmless provisions within the constitutional language, we had to change a whole number of statutes in Senate Bill 3. So in that sense, we were almost pushed to rearrange the statutes as far as the cigarette tax and the OTP is concerned, in order to maintain all the amounts for the other uses that usually gets. And those uses are the cities, the counties, the senior and disabled transportation, the Oregon Health Plan, and the general fund. So the issue that also usually faces us with tobacco tax, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, is that tobacco tax happens in two segments, the 58 cent segment and the 60 cent segment, and because they come at different times and different intent of the voters, what we did is, in order to simplify this, is we made them one segment, $1.18. And you have one page in your packet that goes through a simple chart of how we started applying the different arrangements within the new scheme of distribution. So we discharge. this one in the back of the book. So that constitutional increase, the 84.5 cents, that is dedicated by constitution, which means we cannot do anything else to it except what it is dedicated to. So we'll have to have the healthy kids portion, and of course that's a different amount for 07-09 and then a different amount for 09-11. At 72%, then 68%. Then we have the safety kids, safety net, kids safety net, and rural health and tobacco use reduction account. It's 10% in 09-11 and 4.9 in 07-09. And the allowable thing that is part of the dedication is the Oregon health plan, so it is for the disadvantaged Oregonians. And we've put 18.5% for 07-09 and 17.5% for 09-11. Then the 30% OTP increase in the previous versions of the healthy kids, we did not distribute the Oregon or the other tobacco taxes any differently, but this one we had to dedicate them, one to tobacco use reduction and the one and the other segment, the other half, if you will, for the Oregon health plan. Now that is a new money, that new dedication. The old one was taken, as I mentioned before, as one segment rather than four different segments, and we distributed in a way in order to compensate for the uses that are losing. So we have the general fund getting about 22%, cities, counties, and the senior and disabled transportation at 2.3% each, which leaves a little bit for the hold harmless, and then that goes to about Oregon health plan at about 71.4%. The OTP of the original OTP, the 65% that we used to levy on Oregon, other tobacco products, that primarily goes to general fund and the Oregon health plan. That's how we resolve the differences within the statutes from being a constitutional dedication and a statutory dedication at this point. Now, in the back of the page, you would find what the revenue amounts would be generated according to this new scheme of distribution. The box on the top would have the amounts that are coming from the new revenue, the 84.5 cents. And those are the dedications by these amounts, and that's the amount of dollars for the 07-09 biennium or 09-11 of what these amounts work to be. So you have only the health plan, tobacco use reduction, rural health, kids safety, and healthy kids program. In the bottom box, this would be what the current revenue, or what we call old revenue. Old revenue, new revenue, future revenue. The old revenue goes to the amounts that today are getting, and we see the local government, cities, counties, and transit all getting equal amounts, because that's basically what the statutes hold today. So having said that, Mr. Chair, of course, all these amounts are not inclusive yet of any reductions that might occur with the Senate Bill 571, since it has not become law at this point. And in that sense, the tax policy, as far as these two pieces of the legislation, would probably be in a contradictory path. One will increase and one will decrease. If that happens in the fully implemented biennium of 2009-11, we might be looking at something to between the two different taxes, what we've talked about previously with the $55 million or $50 million that we've talked about, that was basically only old revenue. But to include the new revenue, we would be talking about another 20-some million. So we'd be looking to about plug a hole of about $80 million or so. That on the other issue, Mr. Chair, that we haven't been able to include, and we will include probably in different iterations as this progresses, is the collection costs for the Department of Revenue. As this new tax, and especially the floor tax that is included in the Senate bill, or will be is in the amendment, in the Dash 1 amendment. At one point we had difficulties including the floor tax, since you don't really want to put a floor tax into the constitutional language. I mean, that wasn't necessarily something that council felt that it could be or easily or cleanly put into. You know, the Constitution is going to stay for a number of years, and you don't want language of floor tax in the Constitution. But it was it was included with the Dash 1, and all that needs is needs some implementation language for the Department of Revenue to be able to administer this new tax and the floor tax. That at the latest estimate I've seen is about $1.5 million additional for the Department of Revenue that needs appropriation either within the bill or some other vehicle needs to include their costs into that. I hope that I've bored you enough this morning, and if I haven't, I could go on about talking about this, but I have to announce, Mr. Chair, about 16 years ago today, I became a father for the first time, so I have to say happy birthday for my baby.
Yes.
That's important. That's
very important. Her name is Nasreen, and Nasreen means it's from the family of the Narcissus flower.
Oh.
And 16 years ago,
it happened.
Oh. Today.
That's great. So now she can go out and drive a car and...
Oh, my God!
Buy a pack of these cigarettes. Well, Mazen, you've worked really hard, I know, on the different iterations of the Healthy Kids package, so thank you. Any questions first? This is not... It's simple, Senator Starr.
Thank you. I have a question about the Mazen didn't go over the amendment specific to SJR4. There's a question. The question I have is the new section B on page 2. Just explain to me what that exactly does.
Yeah. Well, what this does, Senator Starr, is there are certain things. For example, if you bring two cartons of cigarettes into the state as your personal use, you don't have to pay on them. There are certain exemptions that's very small and personal. And with the constitutional language, what basically it did, it just didn't leave any room anymore because we've always been doing the tax laws in the
statute.
Right.
So this basically says any cigarettes that are currently exempt from taxation under statute would be exempt under this constitutional
amendment. It gives the structure of what happens in the statute with the exemption.
That's how I read it, but it's a little bit convoluted with the word exempt in there more than once. And, okay, thank you.
Senator Monroe.
No, I had the same question as Senator Starr and answered.
Thank you.
Laura Etherton, Marcia Kelly, Andy Miller. Don't all move at once. I think Laura's right outside.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Starr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Miller. I'm Senior Policy Analyst at the Oregon Business Association. I'm really sorry that I have to be here today. I was hoping this would be done by now. I testified first in January. This is not going to bore you with any more testimony. I want to thank you for persevering. I want to thank you for caring. I'm sorry this has to be a constitutional amendment, but if that's the way we get it done, that's the way we get it done. Thank you.
Did they take a vote? I haven't been. Was there a vote on the statutory referral, or has that vote not occurred yet?
It has not occurred yet, to my knowledge, Chair Deckard.
It has not occurred. Ms. Kelly.
Chair Deckard and members of the committee, Marcia Kelly from the American Association of University Women of Oregon and our 2,000 members. We support the Healthy Kids Plan. We do not like things going into the Constitution. We think there's too much in the Constitution now that doesn't belong there. But if it's the only way, that's the only way. It's too bad that when it goes to the ballot and passes with over 60% of the vote, that people don't understand that this citizens of Oregon support tobacco taxes. So, again, echoing what Ms. Miller says, sorry to be testifying again for AUW. Somebody else testified in February. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. You guys have been at it a long time on this proposal.
Kindergartens, we started in 1922, so.
Still don't have full day.
No, and they're not even mandated. Only mandated to provide, not mandated for the kids to go.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to work on the Constitution amendment for
all day? Fits the Healthy Kids moniker. Ms. Etherton.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, my name is Laura Etherton. I'm the consumer advocate for Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of both of the bills in front of you today. Oregonians across the state are facing sharp increases in the cost of health care, including insurance premiums that are rising, out-of-pocket costs that are going up and going up. Tobacco is a major factor in increasing health care costs that are and driving these costs so high that many families are finding getting health care for children is out of reach. It makes good sense to increase the tobacco tax, and doing so in any way possible, whether that is through a bill, through a statutory referral, or in this case a constitutional referral. Whatever it takes to get health care affordable for Oregon families, and to help prevent the next generation of children from being saddled with the additional health care costs and health care problems that tobacco has caused for too many Oregonians already. We applaud this committee and folks in the legislature for pursuing every possible path to get this done for Oregonians, and encourage you to pass this today. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Senator George.
In your long-range planning, you indicate that you expect tobacco use to drop dramatically. What do you tend to do to provide the revenue for this socialized medicine in the future?
Chair Decker and Senator George, I think that the tobacco tax is an important piece, both as a certainly as a revenue source to fund and help to offset the costs of increased health care costs caused by tobacco. And it's also a very important policy piece, too. The higher cost of cigarettes will help to dissuade children, especially from taking up smoking.
My question, you've already stated those things. What is your solution when you do accomplish a reduction in usage of cigarettes? What's the funding source to continue the program?
Absolutely. In the current plan, the funding source is, it does decline, and that's intended. It's a very predictable, slow decline over the years, and it is fundable quite far ahead into the future. But because the decline in smoking also causes a decrease in health care costs, it ends up being a net gain financially, and we can roll those savings when that happens, and I think many children who are will benefit from this program will be out of high school by the time we're facing that, that those savings can be rolled back in. And I think future legislators will have to look at that, how to take advantage of the health care savings to continue the program.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator George.
We've had a significant reduction in tobacco usage in this state. And why aren't these savings paying for the program right now?
I think, well, actually, that Senator Deckard and Senator Dorsch, that brings up a very good question, which is the overall rise in cost of health care as well, which is something that I know many folks in the legislature are grappling with and looking at. This program alone cannot solve all our health care problems. It will take really taking a solid look at how to reduce overall health care costs, making those costs more accountable, and capturing the savings from reduced smoking and pulling back that into the program. It's possible, and we urge your support for this good plan.
Senator Monroe.
Yes, thank you. My understanding is that while cigarette consumption nationally has had a steady decline in the last few years, and actually in the last several years in Oregon, that has not been the case, that it's actually flattened out or maybe even be slight increase in smoking in this state with our very low tobacco tax. Do you have any information on that?
Chair Deckard and Senator Monroe, I don't actually have the exact numbers with me. I know that with Oregon's reduction in funding for the tobacco prevention programs in recent years, and then also the slight reduction in the tobacco tax itself in recent years, that the rate of decrease in smoking is not positive. It's we're actually seeing a slight increase in the rate of decline. So that's concerning. It also tells us that what we were doing before, increasing the tobacco tax and funding tobacco prevention, was working. And when we stopped doing those things, we saw children taking up smoking more, and that's problematic. So encourage the committee to enact these changes to help get us back on that right track.
Follow up,
please.
Isn't it true that, was it 4 years ago, that this state actually cut its tax on tobacco by 10 cents a pack?
Chair Deckard, Senator Monroe, yes, when the temporary income tax increase was referred to the voters, it also included some of the other provisions of that bill and the tobacco tax. 10 cents was included in that because it had been included in that bill as extending the 10-cent tobacco.
And it was at about that point, follow-up, and it was at about that time, actually, that the decline that we had seen in tobacco use flattened out or maybe even as tipped up a bit.
Chair Deckard and Senator Monroe, I am not an expert on tobacco tax. I think somebody from the Tobacco Tax Coalition or the American Heart Association, Lung Association, or Cancer Society would be able to provide you with those figures. It sounds logical, but I'm not going to make that statement.
Okay. Thank you.
Does anyone want to take that on before we go to Senator Burdick? They don't. Senator Burdick.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Laura, isn't it true that even with the increase in the tobacco tax, if you divide it down to a cost per pack for health care to compensate for, if you divide it down in that way, that it still falls pretty far short of what it costs our society for the actual costs associated with smoking?
Chair Deckard and Senator Burdick, that's true. It's amazing. The tobacco is so harmful for health when you look at what it causes both smokers, what it causes people near smokers through secondhand smoke, and what it causes children when they are growing in the womb if the mother smokes. The health impacts of tobacco are enormous, and I think I've heard numbers as high as you would have to have a tobacco tax of $11 a pack to actually offset the increased health care costs for tobacco. And I think that in practical terms, it makes sense to just do what we can do to help Oregonians stay healthy, to prevent this next generation from taking up smoking, and do what we can to use that revenue to help offset the increased costs that tobacco causes. I think that the best thing we can do is look to the future, look to this next generation, and help to reduce the impacts of tobacco in their lives.
Thank you.
Senator Starr, me. Thank you very much. Appreciate all the time and effort you put in to this. Last person that I have is Karen Nibbler from the League of, I think it's League of Women Voters. And if there's anyone else, feel free to just come on up or we'll move into work session.
Karen Nibbler, League of Women Voters of Oregon. And the League has not testified on Healthy Kids before on any of the bills. So this is our first time commenting. And as you know, the League of Women Voters is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. And the League of Women Voters has a position on health care, and we are in favor of universal health care as long as there are some stipulations about access to the basic level of quality care for all residents and that there's a control on health care costs. And we see healthy kids as a step in the direction towards universal health care, so we are in favor of it. We believe that Oregon has an unacceptable number of uninsured children at this point and that the outreach program in Healthy Kids would help bring some of the children who are currently eligible into that program, and also that the federal matching money is a great incentive since they give us 75 cents for every 25 cents that we spend. That's a good incentive to start this program and will go far into financing this program. Also, the economic situation is changing enormously, and many of our young adults are facing jobs where they don't have health insurance or they only have health insurance for the employee and not for the family. So we have many people who don't have health insurance at this point for their children. And I think that probably every legislator has constituents who are in this situation, who don't have health care for their children. And maybe some of you even have grandchildren that aren't covered at this point. So, or you have friends or relatives or somebody that doesn't have coverage. The League also supports increased taxes to finance a basic level of health care. And we also are in favor of all the cost control methods, and a lot of these are currently being used by the Oregon Health Plan and also by the Private Health Partnership. And, you know, they're already operational. We think it's a good proposal to have them administer this program, and it also makes it easy to implement this. And what we'd like to see is to have this program implemented this session. And what we see, obviously, is the problem is going to be the revenue source. And we are in favor of the tobacco tax, but it could be that another source is going to be needed at some point in the future, as you were just discussing. Anyway, at this point, we see this as something that we think Oregonians need, and we'd like to see you implement this. We also don't see this as a partisan issue. These are our children who may be in either Republican families or Democratic families. It's not partisan. So we'd like to see you act on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the League of Women Voters? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Anyone else on SJR 4 or SB 3?
Mr. Chair.
Mazin.
Just for the point of what you would call the truth in forecasting, I need to declare with the amounts that we see in reduction in consumption is all primarily relied on the increase in price. In the past, as we saw the uptick in smoking in Oregon, of the taxation, if you will, was either as a result of our gaining from relaxed laws or lower tax rates than our neighbors. And in addition, the enforcement mechanism that the Department of Revenue was able to do with the tobacco tax task force, they were able to stop this credit card payments through internet deliveries, which supplanted the went around the taxation stream. So all these increases occurred at that time because of those different amounts. However, we did not put any amounts that we expect for reduction in smoking because of the like $40 million that is dedicated to Tura in the 09-11. We haven't allocated the reduction amounts that would be commensurate to an increase that is relative to an increase in amounts and reduction. So if that actually is an effective program to the point where it reduces smoking very effectively, then we have not accounted for it.
Okay.
Senator Church.
Mr. Chairman, can we have someone from the Department of Human Services here? I'd like to ask a couple of questions before we...
Someone from Department of Human Services here?
Don't see anybody. Yeah.
Well, if you were giving me this much money, I'd be here.
Don't see anyone. Bob Russell from the Truckers might be able to. Might be able to. Any other questions?
Human Services, Trucking Services.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. You know, what I don't see on SB3 is kind of an SMS that explains this program at all. I don't have any experience because this has not been an issue that we've had testimony on. Mm-hmm. I know this has probably had multiple hearings in the House. Unfortunately, we haven't had that here. I guess there's been a lot of conversation, obviously, in the building about this particular program, and folks have lobbied us as senators, even though this is an issue that has been in the House. My questions are, as it relates, I think it's in Section 8 of the bill.
Of SB3,
where it talks about who would be eligible for subsidized health for children. And you know, we also don't have information about what 300% of poverty level is, what kinds of numbers that is. If it would be possible to kind of get that fleshed out a little bit better. Section 8, sub 3, and then sub 5, I think, might be helpful to have. Of all the people in the room, there's got to be somebody that knows more about this program than I do that can come up and talk about who would be eligible for
Section 8.
These subsidies.
So Kate, do you...
Kate?
Well, that's who I'm looking at. Kate, who's been working on this in the majority office.
I don't have my charts of the federal poverty levels here, but I'm guessing somebody...
Shouldn't she be on record?
Unless... I'm going to agree with Senator Starr. There's got to be someone in this audience that knows Section 8 that might not want to testify, but we'd like to have Senator Starr's question answered. So I believe Senator Starr, they're getting their chart.
Anecdotally, we've heard numbers that, you know, families that make up to $70,000 potentially would be eligible for subsidized health care for kids. And if that's what this bill still does, I'd like to know that. And
there's been different iterations of...
If this is the same as the original bill that was introduced...
The original governor's plan.
Yeah. Should I play the Jeopardy music?
Well, we really would like someone to. And Kate, can you make a copy of those, the chart that Laura has, so that the committee?
Yes, okay.
I've seen it.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, this is the right information. Senator Deckert, members of the committee. As I understand, you were interested in the information about what the levels are for the various...
Hand it over to... You have to, Laura, you have to re-identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Laura Atherton with Oxford.
Thank you. Again, just to say that this has been heard and probably reheard and a lot of testimony, but that's happened on the other side of the building, not on this side of the building. And so I'm most interested, I think it's in Section 8 that explains who would be eligible, what kinds of families, and the income levels of those families that would be eligible for subsidized health care under this program. So and, you know, if you could just explain the, you know, the various levels, how much money people would make at the top end and still be eligible for subsidized health care for kids.
Right. Senator Decker.
There's someone behind you with the laptop.
Sorry.
Great. Are you, you're with the Department of Human Services, correct?
I've recovered, yeah. And I'm no longer with them.
Yes. If there's someone that's not here from the Department of Human Services,
okay,
you should be, and we'd request that you come if you can hear us.
Great. Super. Excellent. Okay. We've got everything. So the program goes up to the 300% of poverty level, and that's important to note, is it's actually just beyond 300%. The family would pay 100% of the share. Below that, the family would pay a sliding scale between 200% and 300% of poverty. So as it's closer to 200%, there's a fuller subsidy. And as it gets closer and closer to 300%, the family pays more and more of that sliding scale. For example, up to 300% of poverty for a family of four is up to $59,999, and that's again for a family of four, two adults, two children. And at that level, once you actually got up to that level, the family would be paying the full share. For example, between 200% of poverty and 250, that level for a family of four is about $50,000. $49,999 is what that goes up to. And at that point, the family would be paying more of a share than they would be at the upper levels.
So what is anybody that makes less than 200% of poverty level gets a full subsidy?
Senator Deckert and Senator Starr, that's correct.
So the sliding scale is between 200 and 300. Anybody that makes over 300% of federal poverty pays the entire.
Exactly.
Entire share, though they can still get their health insurance for their kids through this program.
Exactly. And that's just a smart way to do it, because the more families that are together in it, the more it actually helps the market work, because they can together be pooling and be getting a lower rate. So that's a very smart solution there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the leeway. What's the what's the 200% of federal poverty? What's that number?
That number is for a family of four, two adults, two kids. It's $40,000 and less.
Okay.
For a family of four, for a family of two, one adult, one kid, it would go $26,400.
And you can provide us a chart that you're reading from.
Yes.
Okay.
I think they're making copies of that.
Oh, excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's helpful. Right.
And of course, this varies largely depending on how big the family is.
Right.
Senator George.
Well, we need somebody here from the department. I'm just a little bit angry about that. But one of the questions I think you probably will know, because the governor's office has indicated that he has a intention of funding children that are in this country illegally and families that are in the country illegally. Is there any scrutiny in the bill for dealing with the legality of the person being in the state and receiving benefits?
Senator Chair Deckert and Senator George, my understanding in the bill is that there is a look at residency in the piece, but that overall, when it comes to children's health, the idea would to not be turning away children from the basic prevention levels. And what's interesting, I think, just as an aside, is that right now we all pay. When someone goes to the emergency room, it actually increases costs for everybody. And it ends up being actually, in a practical dollars and cents, smart to get folks the prevention that they need, so it doesn't end up costing all of us a whole lot more in the end.
And by that, you mean our premiums.
All of our premiums go up about 10% because of care in the emergency rooms for the uninsured generally. It's a very expensive way to do it.
Mr. Chairman, there is a recognition that this illegal immigration into this country is out of control and it's going to bankrupt the nation. Now, the situation that I'm talking about is we should build into the bill anticipation that there may be a change at the federal level that may encourage us to come back and say we need to determine who's legal here. And a person made a decision to bring their children in here without health care, and I think we need to be able to identify those who should be entitled to the program. Because I'm concerned that we are looking at a diminishing source of revenue, which is going to be cigarette tax, because at this level of taxation, I believe we will impact it. And I want to know what the long-term goal of this plan is going to be for sustainability. And that's probably a question you can't even come close to answering. I just want to get that on the record, and I'm very concerned about where this is headed.
It's a fair question in terms of long-term.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr and Laura, you're doing a great job of filling in for
DHS. Absolutely. And I'm, as I continue to read the bill, I'm getting more questions. And I think that as the Department of Human Services is referenced so time and time again in this bill, it's a failure, I think, probably of the governor's office, since this is his bill, for him not getting on the horn and getting somebody over here from there.
They're coming.
But in under Section 14, it says DHS shall apply, basically looks like to the feds for waivers. I'd be interested to know what kind of waivers are necessary in order to implement this particular program. And also in Section 13, Sub 3, it says that the department may request applicants provide their Social Security numbers. It would, to get this into George's question, if that may was shall, it probably make it a little better. But I understand that we're going to move this bill without any further amendment.
Can you just repeat where you were at?
Sure. It's Section 13, Sub 3. It talks about the department may request applicants provide Social Security numbers. And then in Section 14, it talks about DHS applying for federal waivers. And just curious to know if what's the likelihood of those waivers being granted. Are we... this has not been something that we've heard or had testimony on, so maybe it's not a big deal. I haven't served on the Health Committee before, so.
And that's not really a question.
It's a DHS
Aaron,
question.
I believe that's you. My eyes aren't great. And if someone from the Department of Human Services is not yet here, so Aaron, you're on the hot seat.
Okay.
Laura's been...
To catch me up.
So we've been going through the two. We have the Healthy Kids proposal before us in constitutional form, and Senator Starr and Senator George had questions just on mostly on the Healthy Kids portion, which is now in SB 3. And before I turn it over to them, I'll let you catch your breath. welcome.
Thank you. For the record, Aaron Kelly Steele, Human Services Advisor to Governor Ted Kulongoski.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. I think the question that I had is in Section 14 of the bill, says DHS, Department of Human Services, shall apply Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services for waivers necessary to implement certain sections of this act. I haven't served on health committees before, haven't dealt in this kind of world. The question is, what's the likelihood that the federal government will grant the waivers? Is it any big deal? I mean, are we passing something and then we're going to, you know, do a bunch of paperwork and hope that the feds say, yeah, you can go forward with this? Maybe it's not a big deal. I just don't know. You can talk a little bit about that process.
Sure. Chair Deckert, Senator Starr. Senate Bill 3 proposes to actually increase the income level of children that we serve to 300% of the federal poverty level, and today Oregon has approval to serve children up to 200% of the federal poverty level from our federal partner. So we would need a waiver to draw down and maximize the federal revenue available to us to raise that poverty level from the 200 to 300%. Just in the last 4 months, a state on the East Coast, which eludes me right now, has received federal approval to do this. And really what this is about Oregon claiming all of the federal match available to us to maximize coverage for children in the state. And so we believe the likelihood is high that we will receive those waivers, but it is a step that we have to go through.
Okay. That's helpful.
Senator,
Senator George?
And on page 8, line 11, in accordance with application of the state and federal law, the Office of the Department...
Can we just...
Oh, okay.
I'm just getting here and on the letter.
You're on... Are you not...
Yeah, on Senate Bill 3.
Uh-huh.
The question is, at the end of line 11, it says, may request applicant's Social Security number, and we were suggesting that should be shall. Is there any reason that we would not require that? And the issue was the legality of the person being present in the country or in the state. Because, you know, I can see us being a magnet like we were for a period of time with our dental plan, when we had people that were coming down from Alaska, coming from Colorado, or wherever, in order to get their teeth fixed in Oregon at the expense of the public.
Chair Deckard, Senator George, I do think DHS is a better source in terms of the legal language that you need in order to make this request. I do know it is something that is requested on all applications for eligibility today, and the reason for that is that under federal law, the Deficit Reduction Act that passed last February, there are certain children for whom we can claim federal match and certain children for whom we cannot. And so part of what we need to be able to find out when we do review eligibility for these programs is whether a child is a citizen or a non-citizen, and that review is part, the Social Security review is part of that. It also, with children who sometimes don't instantly have Social Security cards, especially when they're newborns and they're applying for these programs, sometimes we use other proof of citizenship like birth certificates for those younger children. My understanding is that it is the department's intent to ask that question of all people who are applying, because that is what happens in terms of our ability to maximize the federal funds available to us.
Would you have any problem with that word being changed to shall?
Dr. Goldberg, do you want to? Would you mind joining us and sitting where Laura's purse was? Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Department of Human Services, apologies for not having been here.
Dr. Goldberg, we're just, and Aaron's helping walk us through. Most of the questions that folks have are on SB 3, which is just the latest basic policy portion of the Healthy Kids Plan, not around the tax portion. Senator George.
Page 8. Line 11, changing the word may request applicant provide Social Security number to shall. The governor's office has indicated that that's what we normally do. This is a massive program, and I don't want to be rude, but I find it amazing that we were going to slam dunk this thing and you guys weren't here. And that's just my comment for the day. And I appreciate your apology.
Okay. And Legislative Council, do you want to come up too? I think you may have some insight into that, Senator George's. The table gets bigger, so we'll let Council be available, and then Dr. Goldberg, if you want to take it.
Sure. I think there's a. Senator George, if I can just clarify, my sense is this is really about the requirement or not requirement to verify Social Security numbers. And the issue for us as a department, I think, as we've discussed many times, is that in terms of eligibility for programs, that what we do is we follow federally mandated requirements, and that's how we organize and run these programs, and we do them to the extent of the law. Moving beyond that, we then the question is always the degree to which we as a department and you as a legislature are looking to have us institute any other number of administrative ways to verify, you know, who people are, what income they make, et cetera. Not everybody in our programs has a Social Security number. And as a result, we don't request that of everybody.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is so critical. I had a fiscal officer for a county tell me that she believed that 80% of the people that were receiving benefits in that county, including some of the things we're talking about here, did not have a Social Security card, and so she suspected were illegally in the country. Why wouldn't we request this? Would the federal government prevent us from asking it? Because then we could begin to estimate how much are we spending on the illegal population. Because those are decisions we're going to need to deal with. As this explosion of immigration, illegal immigration, is occurring, we've got to be able to identify, can we sustain that financially? Yeah. And you've heard some of the numbers with the immigration bill that over 20 years it could be $2.5 trillion that we're talking about. It's an amazing amount of money that if we don't get it under control now. That, to me, that Social Security number would be a key to determine whether or not you are dealing with a person legally in the country, and should they be receiving benefits.
Chair Deckard, Senator George, we can. I don't know whether the federal requirement or not, and we can certainly check on that. You know, in terms of, and I think it's an important issue in terms of the individuals that we serve within our programs. I would be happy to provide you with a detailed chart and information about the individuals in our programs that we serve who are citizens and those who are not citizens. We serve a number of people in our programs who are not citizens, and we do that because it's the requirement of the federal government. Our issue as a department, as I've always indicated, is I understand that immigration is obviously a huge political issue for us as an economic and a social issue. For us as a department, the issue is we need to be able to provide health and human services to individuals within the constructs of what the legislature and the federal government tells us. And what we do is carry out those things to the best of our ability. The issues beyond that are not health and human services issues, and we need to be really clear, we need to be transparent, and we need to carry out and uphold the law in the best way we can as others talk about these issues as they relate to, you know, many other domains.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up question.
Does counsel have insight into an answer on that? And
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, Lori Freeman, Office of Legislative Counsel, and I just wanted to point out a couple of things. First of all, on the question of requesting Social Security numbers, I researched that issue when I was drafting this bill and learned that federal law prohibits us from denying benefits to someone who, on the basis of refusing to give a Social Security number, and I'd be happy to provide the citation to you for that. I'd have to go dig it out of my notes.
But my point is not denying services, even though I think that's an important thing to consider. The thing is, if you may request that information, then you could just collect it. You could decide to do it every time for the purpose of gathering data as to where we are in relationship to our expected future cost. Wouldn't that be correct? You're not denying services. You're just collecting the data. Do they have a Social Security card?
Chair Deckard, Senator George, the feds prohibit us from requiring people to provide a Social Security number, so we could ask for it. The other thing I wanted to point out was that in Section 2, Subsection 6, which is on page 2 of Senate Bill 3, lines 13 to 15, that requires the department to adopt verification requirements to ensure that recipients of benefits in the program are legal residents.
But I've just been told we're not going to do that. That's my point, is we have a conflict. We say, how would you verify that if, in fact, you can't gather the data to determine whether they are here legally?
Chair Deckard, Senator George, there are other ways to determine legal residency other than Social Security numbers. And
and that's what the department is already has to do under federal law for most of the federal programs.
Can I ask a clarifying question, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, just for clarity, because this is the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, and y'all have been before more policy committees on that than I probably care to know about on the Healthy Kids. So we're really focused, obviously, on the revenue. These are important questions around more of the policy decisions, but we'll try to circle back to
Mr. Chair. Does this bill have a subsequent referral to one of the health committees?
It came from the committee that it's open now, and I think that was the discussion you had. My understanding is when it was in the Rules Committee, which is the only operating policy committee, you really did focus on the policy part. It was sent to Revenue for us to do what Mazin walked us through and did not bore us to tears, Mazin. We were engrossed.
We were riveted.
In the Revenue portion. So that's really what we're not exploring as much as we thought we would. Is really the revenue portion of this, and then they'll go on to the House and hit a policy committee too.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. So I don't necessarily want to prolong this. And now I was trying to remember what my clarifying question was. I remember going back to the page 2, lines 13 through 15, and ensuring that recipients of the benefits of the Healthy Kids program are legal residents. I think you can. Are we talking about legal in what respect? Because I can say you are an Oregon citizen, so you reside here, or you make Oregon your home, or is it legal in terms of you are legal in the United States? You're a legal citizen within the confines of the United States. I think there's two different ways that could be interpreted.
Chair Deckert, Senator Starr. The way it's used in the Oregon Revised Statutes, if you say legal residence with a C, then it just refers to someone who has a residence here. But the usage in the ORS for legal residence with a T means that you're a citizen or that you have a legal immigration status.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Kelly Seal.
Can I ask Mr. Goldberg one more question?
Here we go. The last question for Dr. Goldberg. Yes.
Again, I appreciate, Mr. Chair, your allowing us to pursue this a little bit. We already, in the state of Oregon, provide health insurance, health opportunities for children in the state, correct? Through a variety of programs, primarily funded for the federal government.
Chair Deckert and Senator Starr, yes, we do.
The question I have is, of the potential young children that this bill will cover, how many of them haven't, or their parents have not, enrolled in or taken advantage of current programs that would cover their health care?
Chair Deckert, Senator Starr, we currently in our Medicaid program and our SCHIP program through the Oregon Health Plan, we offer eligibility to people up to about 185% of poverty who meet a number of other eligibility criteria. There are approximately 50,000 children who we believe are eligible but have not enrolled for a variety of reasons, which I could detail for you. And I believe that one of the issues around this bill, as well as others, has been the mandate for us as a department to take a number of steps that would allow us to enroll those children, changing eligibility from 6 to 12 months, looking at issues around assets, being able to do the appropriate kinds of outreach, and having an application process which is more conducive to being certain that we capture these children.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend. Close the public hearing on SB 3 and SJR 4. Open a work session on SB 3. There's a -1 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Move the dash one amendments to SB 3.
Senator Monroe has moved the dash one amendments to SB 3. Discussion. Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator George?
Nope.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Senator Decker?
Votes aye. Senator Monroe.
Move SB 3 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves SB 3 as amended to the
Monroe.
Floor.
Monroe.
Actually, it was me.
Monroe.
Oh, did I?
Ben Starr.
Tried to sneak one in there.
nice try.
Senator Monroe has moved SB 3 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator George?
No.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Chair Decker?
Votes
aye. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Starr.
On third notice of possible minority report.
Possible minority report has been served notice of. Open. Motion passes. Senator Monis Anderson and Decker will carry that one, I believe. Let me... Who's supposed to carry?
Monis Anderson.
Monis Anderson and Deckard will carry that one. Open a work session on SJR 4.
Chair, I would move the A2 amendments to SJR 4.
Senator George has moved the. Senator Monroe has moved the A2 amendments to SJR 4. Discussion.
I was moved, but I didn't move that.
Please call the roll.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator George?
Nope.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Chair Decker?
Votes aye. Senator Monroe.
Would move Senate Joint Resolution 4 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Rod Monroe has moved SJR 4 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
And just briefly... There's been a lot of talk about the fact that this may cause people to not smoke as much, cause many children to not start smoking, and therefore the revenue may decline to a point where it doesn't adequately fund the program. I hope that happens. I hope it happens quickly. Anything we can do to discourage smoking and to encourage people to raise healthy kids, I think is a positive thing, and society will pay many positive benefits in the long run.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator George.
I would agree with that comment, except I think it's irresponsible for us to move forward on a program that we know we can't sustain with a declining revenue source.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stark.
I'm going to oppose this, and it's frustrating for me because I think that ultimately there could have been, probably still could be, measure that was in a House bill that I could have supported, where we statutorily enact a increase in a tax that I think is one that would help to fund health programs. But the fact that we're here and we're talking about putting a cigarette tax in the Constitution, I can't hardly believe that. It just blows my mind. I think it's absolutely horrible tax policy. We through the initiative process, have put a lot of stuff in the Constitution that I think that a lot of us and probably a lot of folks in the audience would rather not have in the Constitution. And yet here we are as the legislative body of the state of Oregon, and we're adding to, I think, that problem. And I think it's really a failure of the legislative process that we're sitting here today with an SJR to put into the Oregon Constitution a cigarette tax that really ought to be done statutorily. And it's very frustrating for me to be here today and to vote no on this particular constitutional amendment.
Okay, thank you.
Yes,
Senator Burke, I just want one thing on that. I do believe, and I have not been involved in the ins and outs of this, but that the only reason that we are here in mid-June voting on this is that they're looking for the votes necessary to do it the way they preferred, which is statutorily a Healthy Kids program. And I think that's my understanding, the only reason that the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee has this before us in the Senate floor is that the votes aren't there at this point. And I think the moment that they're there, I don't think the constitutional measure would advance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't like having a constitutional amendment either, and I would just invite my colleague to get his colleagues on his side of the aisle to do it the right way, because at the end of the day, our obligation is to the people of Oregon, to the children of Oregon. There's a right way to do it and a less right way to do it. This is the less right way to do it by several orders of magnitude. I would love to do it the right way, but we can't do it. We can't do it without cooperation in this building. So I will be voting yes today.
Thank you, Senator Burdick.
Do I get to say something, Mr. Chair?
That's cool.
No.
happy birthday to Nerissa.
I was going to say, I thought I was boring until I heard the policy discussion.
Sorry.
Mazen, careful. Please call the roll.
Senator Burke?
Aye.
Senator George?
No.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Stark?
Votes no.
Chair Deckard?
Votes aye. The motion carries. Senator? Senator Starr?
Serve notice of possible minority report.
Senator Starr serves notice of possible minority report. Senator Carter and Deckard carry that bill. We are adjourned until 8 a.m. I think our big meeting will be Monday starting at 8. Senator George offered to take up the MDAC. Carter and Deckard. I felt like I was at a baseball game there. So, Senator, we'll start Monday at 8 a.m. With 7 bills. We are adjourned until Monday. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, our pleasure. All right. Mazel. We're not boring. We're persistent.
Okay.
And remember that. And that can't be boring.
City of Lapine.
Yes.
You don't remember it?
No, but
we heard it. It just gives them the authority to go to the voters for a tax base for their new city.
Uh-huh.
We heard it now.
But that was the massive.